Lord's golden eyes. The Queen of Terrasen. Aelin bowed, not daring to take her attention off the witch. At your service. Only 3 feet separated her from the Blackbeak heir. The witch sliced a glance at Kaol, and then at Adian and Rowan. Your court? What's it to you? The wingleader studied Adian again. Your brother? My cousin, Adian. Almost as pretty as me, wouldn't you say? The witch didn't smile. But Aelin was now near enough, so close that the spatters of Kaol's blood lay in the grass before the tip of her boots. The Queen of Terrasen. Aelin's hope had not been misplaced. Even if the young queen was now towing the dirt and grass, unable to keep still while she bargained for the man's life. Behind her, the Fey warrior observed every flicker of movement. He'd be the deadly one, the one to look out for. It had been 50 years since she'd fought a Fey warrior. Bedded him, then fought him. He'd left the bones of her arm in pieces. She'd just left him in pieces. But he had been young, and arrogant, and barely trained. This male, he might very well be capable of killing at least a few of her 13, if she so much as harmed a hair on the queen's head. And then there was the golden-haired one, as large as the Fey male, but possessing his cousin's bright arrogance and honed wildness. He might be problematic if left alive too long. The queen kept fidgeting her foot in the grass. She couldn't be more than 20. And yet she moved like a warrior, too. Or she had, until the incessant shifting around. But she halted the movement, as if realizing that it gave away her nerves, her inexperience. The wind was blowing in the wrong direction for Manon to detect the queen's true level of fear. Well, wingleader? Would the king put a collar around her fair neck, as he had the prince's? Or would he kill her? It made no difference. She would be a prize the king would welcome. Manon shoved the captain away, sending him stumbling toward the queen. Aelin reached out with an arm, nudging him to the side, behind her. Manon and the queen stared at each other. No fear in her eyes, in her pretty mortal face. None. It'd be more trouble than it was worth. Manon had bigger things to consider anyway. Her grandmother approved. Approved of the breeding, the breaking of the witches. Manon needed to get into the sky, needed to lose herself in cloud and wind for a few hours. Days. Weeks. I have no interest in prisoners or battling today, Manon said. The Queen of Terrasen gave her a grin. Good. Manon turned away, barking at her 13 to get to their mounts. I suppose, the queen went on, that makes you smarter than Baba Yellowlegs. Manon stopped, staring straight ahead and seeing nothing of the grass or sky or trees. Asterin whirled. What do you know of Baba Yellowlegs? The queen gave a low chuckle, despite the warning growl from the Fey warrior. Slowly, Manon looked over her shoulder. The queen tugged apart the lapels of her tunic, revealing a necklace of thin scars as the wind shifted. The scent, iron and stone and pure hatred, hit Manon like a rock to the face. Every Iron Teeth witch knew the scent that forever lingered on those scars. Witch killer. Perhaps Manon would lose herself in blood and gore instead. You're carrion, Manon said, and lunged, only to slam face first into an invisible wall, and then freeze entirely. Run, Aelin breathed, snatching up Goldrin and bolting for the trees. The wingleader was frozen in place, her sentinels wide-eyed as they rushed to her. Kaol's human blood wouldn't hold the spell for long. The ravine, Adian said, not looking back from where he sprinted ahead with Kaol toward the temple. They hurtled through the trees, the witches still in the meadow, still trying to break the spell that had trapped their wingleader. You, Rowan said as he ran beside her, are one very lucky woman. Tell me that again when we're out of here, she panted, leaping over a fallen tree. A roar of fury set the birds scattering from the trees, and Aelin ran faster. Oh, the wingleader was pissed. Really, really pissed. Aelin hadn't believed for one moment that the witch would have let them walk away without a fight. She had needed to buy whatever time they could get. The trees cleared, revealing a barren stretch of land jutting toward the deep ravine, and the temple perched on the spit of rock in the center. On the other side, Oakwald sprawled onward. Connected only by two chain and wood bridges, it was the sole way across the ravine for miles, and with the dense foliage of Oakwald blocking the wyverns, it was the only way to escape the witches, who would no doubt pursue on foot.
Hurry!
Rowan shouted, as they made for the crumbling temple ruins. The temple was small enough that not even the priestesses had dwelled here. The only decorations on the stone island were five weather-stained pillars and a crumbling domed roof, not even an altar, or at least one that had survived the centuries. Apparently, people had given up on Temis long before the King of Otterlin came along. She just prayed that the bridges on either side. Adian hurled himself to a stop before the first footbridge, Kaol 30 paces behind, Aelin and Rowan following.
Secure,
Adian said. Before she could bark a warning, he thundered across. The bridge bounced and swayed, but held. Held even as her damn heart stopped. Then Adian was at the Temple Island, the single thin pillar of rock carved out by the rushing river flowing far, far below. He waved Kaol on.
One at a time,
he ordered. Beyond him, the second bridge waited. Kaol hurried through the stone pillars that flanked the entrance to the first bridge, the thin iron chains on the sides writhing as the bridge bounced. He kept upright, flying toward the temple, faster than she'd ever seen him run during all those morning exercises through the castle grounds. Then Aelin and Rowan were at the columns and...
Don't even try to argue,
Rowan hissed, shoving her ahead of him.
Gods above, that was a wicked drop beneath them.
The roar of the river was barely a whisper. But she ran because Rowan was waiting, and there were the witches breaking through the trees with fey swiftness. The bridge bucked and swayed as she shot over the aging wooden planks. Ahead, Adian had cleared the second bridge to the other side, and Kaol was now sprinting across it.
Faster.
She had to go faster. She leaped the final few feet onto the temple rock. Ahead, Kaol exited the second bridge and drew his blade as he joined Adian on the grassy cliff beyond, an arrow knocked in her cousin's bow, aimed at the trees behind her. Aelin lunged up the few stairs onto the bald temple platform. The entire circular space was barely more than 30 feet across, bordered on all sides by a sheer plunge and death. Temis, apparently, was not the forgiving sort. She twisted to look behind. Rowan was running across the bridge, so fast that the bridge hardly moved, but... Aelin swore. The wingleader had reached the posts, flinging herself over and jumping through the air to land a third of the way down the bridge. Even Adian's warning shot went long, the arrow embedding where any mortal should have landed. But not a witch. Holy burning hell.
Go!
Rowan roared at Aelin, but she palmed her fighting knives, bending her knees as an arrow fired by the golden-haired lieutenant shot for Aelin from the other side of the ravine. Aelin twisted to avoid it, only to find a second arrow from the witch already there, anticipating her maneuver. A wall of muscle slammed into her, shielding her and shoving her to the stones, and the witch's arrow went clean through Rowan's shoulder. Chapter 60. For a moment, the world stopped. Rowan slammed onto the temple stones, his blood spraying on the aging rock. Aelin's scream echoed down the ravine. But then he was up again, running and bellowing at her to go. Beneath the dark arrow protruding through his shoulder, blood already soaked his tunic, his skin. If he had been 1 inch farther behind, it would have hit his heart. Not 40 paces down the bridge, the wingleader closed in on them.
Adian rained arrows on her sentinels with preternatural precision, keeping them at bay by the tree line. Aelin wrapped an arm around Rowan, and they raced across the temple stones, his face paling as the wound gushed blood. She might have still been screaming, or sobbing. There was such a roaring silence in her. Her heart. It had been meant for her heart. And he had taken that arrow for her. The killing calm spread through her like hoarfrost. She'd kill them all. Slowly. They reached the second bridge just as Adian's barrage of arrows halted. His quiver no doubt emptied. She shoved Rowan onto the planks.
Run,
she said.
No.
Run! It was a voice that she'd never heard herself use. A queen's voice that came out, along with the blind yank she made on the blood oath that bound them together. His eyes flashed with fury, but his body moved as though she'd compelled him. He staggered across the bridge, just as Aelin whirled, drawing Goldrin and ducking just as the wingleader's sword swiped for her head. It hit stone, the pillar groaning, but Aelin was already moving. Not toward the second bridge, but back toward the first one, on the witch's side. Where the other witches, without Adian's arrows to block them, were now racing from the cover of the woods.
You,
the wingleader growled, attacking again. Aelin rolled, right through Rowan's blood, again dodging the fatal blow. She uncurled to her feet right in front of the first bridge, and two swings of Goldrin had the chains snapping. The witches skidded to a stop at the lip of the ravine, as the bridge collapsed, cutting them off. The air behind her shifted, and Aelin moved, but not fast enough. Cloth and flesh tore in her upper arm, and she barked out a cry as the witch's blade sliced her. She whirled, bringing Goldrin up for the second blow. Steel met steel, and sparked. Rowan's blood was at her feet, smeared across the temple stones. Aelin Galathinius looked at Manon Blackbeak over their crossed swords, and let out a low, vicious snarl. Queen, savior, enemy. Manon didn't give a shit. She was going to kill the woman. Their laws demanded it. Honor demanded it. Even if she hadn't slaughtered Baba Yellowlegs, Manon would have killed her just for that spell she'd used to freeze her in place. That was what she'd been doing with her feet, etching some foul spell with the man's blood. And now she was going to die. Windcleaver pressed against the queen's blade, but Aelin held her ground and hissed, "I'm going to rip you to shreds." Behind them, the 13 gathered on the ravine's edge, cut off. One whistle from Manon had half of them scrambling for the wyverns. She didn't get to sound the second whistle. Faster than a human had a right to be, the queen swept out a leg, sending Manon tripping back. Aelin didn't hesitate. She flipped the sword in her hand and lunged. Manon deflected the blow, but Aelin got past her guard and pinned her, slamming her head against stones that were damp with the Fey warrior's blood. Splotches of dark bloomed in her vision. Manon drew in breath for the second whistle, the one to call off Astarin and her arrows. She was interrupted by the queen slamming her fist into Manon's face. Black splintered further across her vision, but she twisted, twisted with every bit of her immortal strength, and they went flipping across the temple floor. The drop loomed, and then an arrow whizzed right for the queen's exposed back as she landed atop Manon. Manon twisted again, and the arrow bounced off the pillar instead. She threw Aelin from her, but the queen was instantly on her feet again, nimble as a cat. "She's mine," Manon barked across the ravine to Astarin. The queen laughed, hoarse and cold, circling as Manon got to her feet. Across the other side of the ravine, the two males were helping the wounded Fey warrior off the bridge, and the golden-haired warrior charged.
"Don't you dare, Adian,"
Aelin said, throwing out a hand in the male's direction. He froze halfway across the bridge. Impressive, Manon admitted, to have them under her command so thoroughly.
"Kaol, keep an eye on him," the queen barked.
Then, holding Manon's gaze,
Aelin sheathed her mighty blade across her back, the giant ruby in the pommel catching in the midday light.
"Swords are boring,"
the queen said, and palmed two fighting knives. Manon sheathed Windcleaver along her own back. She flicked her wrists, the iron nails shooting out. She cracked her jaw, and her fangs descended.
"Indeed."
The queen looked at the nails, the teeth, and grinned. Honestly, it was a shame that Manon had to kill her. Manon Blackbeak lunged, as swift and deadly as an adder. Aelin darted back, dodging each swipe of those lethal iron nails. For her throat, for her face, for her guts, back and back circling around the pillars. It was only a matter of minutes before the wyverns arrived. Aelin jabbed with her daggers, and the witch sidestepped her, only to slash with her nails right at Aelin's neck. Aelin spun aside, but the nails grazed her skin. Blood warmed her neck and shoulders. The witch was so damn fast, and one hell of a fighter. But Rowan and the others were across the second bridge. Now she just had to get there, too. Manon Blackbeak fainted left and slashed right. Aelin ducked and rolled aside. The pillar shuddered as those iron claws gouged four deep lines into the stone. Manon hissed. Aelin made to drive her dagger into her spine. The witch lashed out with a hand and wrapped it clean around the blade. Blue blood welled, but the witch bore down on the blade until it snapped into three pieces in her hand.
Gods above.
Aelin had the sense to go in low with her other dagger, but the witch was already there, and Adian's shout rang in her ears as Manon's knee drove up into her gut. The air knocked from her in a whoosh, but Aelin kept her grip on the dagger, even as the witch threw her into another pillar. The stone column rocked against the blow, and Aelin's head cracked, agony arcing through her, but a slash, directly for her face. Aelin ducked. Again, the stone shuddered beneath the impact. Aelin squeezed air into her body. Move! She had to keep moving, smooth as a stream, smooth as the wind of her Carinom, bleeding and hurt across the way. Pillar to pillar she retreated, rolling and ducking and dodging. Manon swiped and slashed, slamming into every column, a force of nature in her own right. And then back around, again and again, pillar after pillar absorbing the blows that should have shredded her face, her neck. Aelin slowed her steps, let Manon think she was tiring, growing clumsy.
"Enough, coward,"
Manon hissed, making to tackle Aelin to the ground. But Aelin swung around a pillar and onto the thin lip of bare rock beyond the temple platform, the drop looming, just as Manon collided with the column. The pillar groaned, swayed, and toppled to the side, hitting the pillar beside it, sending them both cracking to the ground, along with the domed roof. Manon didn't even have time to lunge out of the way as the marble crashed down on her. One of the few remaining witches on the other side of the ravine screamed. Aelin was already running, even as the rock island itself began trembling, as if whatever ancient force held this temple together had died the moment the roof crumbled.
Shit.
Aelin sprinted for the second bridge, dust and debris burning her eyes and lungs. The island jolted with a thunderous crack, so violent that Aelin stumbled. But there were the posts and the bridge beyond. Adian waiting on the other side, an arm held out, beckoning. The island swayed again, wider and longer this time. It was going to collapse beneath them. There was a flicker of blue and white, a flash of red cloth, a glimmer of iron, a hand and a shoulder grappling with a fallen column. Slowly, painfully, Manon heaved herself onto a slab of marble, her face coated in pale dust, blue blood leaking down her temple. Across the ravine, cut off entirely, the golden-haired witch was on her knees.
Manon!
I don't think you've ever groveled for anything in your life, wing leader,
the king had said. But there was a Blackbeak witch on her knees, begging whatever gods they worshipped. And there was Manon Blackbeak,
struggling to rise as the temple island crumbled away. Aelin took a step onto the bridge.
Astarin, that was the golden-haired witch's name.
She screamed for Manon again, a plea to rise, to survive. The island jolted. The remaining bridge, the bridge to her friends, to Rowan, to safety, still held.
Aelin had felt it before, a thread in the world, a current running between her and someone else. She'd felt it one night years ago, and had given a young healer the money to get the hell out of this continent. She'd felt the tug, and had decided to tug back. Here it was again, that tug, toward Manon, whose arms buckled as she collapsed to the stone. Her enemy, her new enemy, who would have killed her and Rowan if given the chance. A monster incarnate. But perhaps the monsters needed to look out for each other every now and then.
Run!
Adian roared from across the ravine. So she did. Aelin ran for Manon, leaping over the fallen stones, her ankle wrenching on loose debris. The island rocked with her every step, and the sunlight was scalding, as if Mala were holding that island aloft with every last bit of strength the goddess could summon in this land. Then Aelin was upon Manon Blackbeak, and the witch lifted hate-filled eyes to her. Aelin hauled off stone after stone from her body, the island beneath them buckling.
You're too good a fighter to kill, Aelin breathed,
hooking an arm under Manon's shoulders and hauling her up. The rock swayed to the left, but held.
Oh, gods. If I die because of you, I'll beat the shit out of you in hell.
She could have sworn the witch let out a broken laugh as she got to her feet, nearly a dead weight in Aelin's arms.
You should let me die,
Manon rasped as they limped over the rubble.
I know,
Aelin panted, her sliced arm aching with the weight of the witch it supported. They hurried over the second bridge, the temple rock swaying to the right, stretching the bridge behind them tightly over the drop, and the shining river far, far below. Aelin tugged at the witch, gritting her teeth, and Manon stumbled into a staggering run. Adian remained between the posts across the ravine, an arm still extended toward her, while his other lifted his sword high, ready for the wing leader's arrival. The rock behind them groaned.
Halfway, nothing but a death plunge waiting for them.
Manon coughed blue blood onto the wooden slats. Aelin snapped,
What the hell good are your beasts if they can't save you from this kind of thing?
The island veered back in the other direction, and the bridge went taut.
Oh, shit. Shit, it was going to snap.
Faster they ran, until she could see Adian's straining fingers on the whites of his eyes. The rock cracked, so loudly it deafened her. Then came the tug and stretch of the bridge as the island began to crumble into dust, sliding to the side. Aelin lunged the last few steps, gripping Manon's red cloak, as the chains of the bridge snapped. The wooden slats dropped out from beneath them, but they were already leaping. Aelin let out a grunt as she slammed into Adian. She whirled to see Kaol grabbing Manon and hauling her over the lip of the ravine, her cloak torn and covered in dust, fluttering in the wind. When Aelin looked past the witch, the temple was gone. Manon gasped for air, concentrating on her breathing, on the cloudless sky above her. The humans left her lying between the stone bridge posts. The queen hadn't even bothered to say goodbye. She just dashed for the injured Fey warrior, his name like a prayer on her lips.
Rowan!
Manon had looked up in time to see the queen fall to her knees before the injured warrior in the grass, demanding answers from the brown-haired man, Kaol, who pressed a hand to the arrow wound in Rowan's shoulder to staunch the bleeding. The queen's shoulders were shaking.
Fire heart.
The Fey warrior murmured. Manon would have watched. Would have. Had she not coughed blood onto the bright grass and blacked out. When she awoke, they were gone. Only minutes had passed. Because then there were booming wings, and Abraxos's roar. And there were Astarin and Sorrel, rushing for her before their wyverns had fully landed. The Queen of Terrasen had saved her life. Manon didn't know what to make of it.
for she now owed her enemy a life debt. And she had just learned how thoroughly her grandmother and the King of Otterlin intended to destroy them.
Chapter 61.
The trek back through Oakwald was the longest journey of Aelin's miserable life. Nezrin had removed the arrow from Rowan's shoulder, and Adian had found some herbs to chew and shove into the open wound to staunch the bleeding. But Rowan still sagged against Kaol and Adian as they hurried through the forest. Nowhere to go. She had nowhere to take an injured Fey male in the capital city, in this entire shithole kingdom. Lysandra was pale and shaking, but she'd squared her shoulders and offered to help carry Rowan when one of them tired. None of them accepted. When Kaol at last asked Nezrin to take over, Aelin glimpsed the blood soaking his tunic and hands, Rowan's blood, and nearly vomited. Slower. Every step was slower as Rowan's strength flagged.
"He needs to rest,"
Lysandra said gently. Aelin paused, the towering oaks pressing in around her. Rowan's eyes were half closed, his face drained of all color. He couldn't even lift his head. She should have let the witch die. "We can't just camp out in the middle of the woods," Aelin said. "He needs a healer."
"I know where we can take him,"
Kaol said. She dragged her eyes to the captain. She should have let the witch kill him, too. Kaol wisely averted his gaze and faced Nezrin.
"Your father's country house. The man who runs it is married to a midwife."
Nezrin's mouth tightened.
"She's not a healer, but yes, she might have something."
"Do you understand?" Aelin said very quietly to them, "that if I suspect they're going to betray us, they will die." It was true, and maybe it made her a monster to Kaol, but she didn't care.
"I know,"
Kaol said. Nezrin merely nodded, still calm, still solid.
"Then lead the way," Aelin said, her voice hollow,
"and pray they can keep their mouths shut." Joyous, frenzied barking greeted them, rousing Rowan from the half-consciousness he'd fallen into during the last few miles to the little stone farmhouse. Aelin had barely breathed the entire time. But despite herself, despite Rowan's injuries, as Fleetfoot raced across the high grass toward them, Aelin smiled a little. The dog leaped upon her, licking and whining and wagging her feathery golden tail. She hadn't realized how filthy and bloody her hands were until she put them on Fleetfoot's shining coat. Adian grunted as he took all of Rowan's weight while Kaol and Nezrin jogged for the large, brightly lit stone house, dusk having fallen fully around them. Good. Fewer eyes to see as they exited Oakwald and crossed the freshly tilled fields. Lysandra tried to help Adian, but he refused her again. She hissed at him and helped anyway. Fleetfoot danced around Aelin, then noticed Adian, Lysandra, and Rowan, and that tale became a bit more tentative.
"Friends,"
she told her dog. She'd become huge since Aelin had last seen her. She wasn't sure why it surprised her, when everything else in her life had changed as well. Aelin's assurance seemed good enough for Fleetfoot, who trotted ahead, escorting them to the wooden door that had opened to reveal a tall midwife with a no-nonsense face, that took one look at Rowan and tightened. One word. One damn word that suggested she might turn them in, and she was dead. But the woman said,
"Whoever put that blood moss on the wound saved his life. Get him inside. We need to clean it before anything else can be done."
It took a few hours for Marta, the housekeeper's wife, to clean, disinfect, and patch up Rowan's wounds.
"Lucky," she kept saying. "So lucky it didn't hit anything vital."
Kaol didn't know what to do with himself, other than carry away the bowls of bloodied water. Aelin just sat on a stool beside the cot in the spare room of the elegant, comfortable house, and monitored every move Marta made. Kaol wondered if Aelin knew that she was a bloodied mess, that she looked even worse than Rowan. Her neck was brutalized. Blood had dried on her face. Her cheek was bruised, and the left sleeve of her tunic was torn open to reveal a vicious slice. and then there were the dust, dirt, and blue blood of the wing leader coating her. But Aelin perched on the stool, never moving, only drinking water, snarling if Marta so much as looked at Rowan funny. Marta, somehow, endured it. And when the midwife was done, she faced the queen. With no clue at all who sat in her house, Marta said, "You have two choices. You can either go wash up in the spigot outside, or you can sit with the pigs all night. You're dirty enough that one touch could infect his wounds." Aelin glanced over her shoulder at Adian, who was leaning against the wall behind her. He nodded silently. He'd look after him. Aelin rose and stalked out. "I'll inspect your other friend now," Marta said, and hurried to where Lysandra had fallen asleep in the adjoining room, curled up on a narrow bed cot. Upstairs, Nezrin was busy dealing with the staff, ensuring their silence. But he'd seen the tentative joy on their faces when they'd arrived. Nezrin and the Falik family had earned their loyalty long ago. Kaol gave Aelin 2 minutes, and then followed her outside. The stars were bright overhead, the full moon nearly blinding. The night wind whispered through the grass, barely audible over the clunk and sputter of the spigot. He found the queen crouched before it, her face in the stream of water.
"I'm sorry," he said.
She rubbed at her face and heaved the lever until more water poured over her. Kaol went on.
"I just wanted to end it for him. You were right. All this time you were right. But I wanted to do it myself. I didn't know it would... I'm sorry."
She released the lever and pivoted to look up at him.
"I saved my enemy's life today," she said flatly.
She uncoiled to her feet, wiping the water from her face. And though he stood taller than her, he felt smaller as Aelin stared at him.
"No, not just Aelin.
Queen Aelin Ashriver Galathinius," he realized, was staring at him.
"They tried to shoot my
Rowan through the heart, and I saved her anyway." "I know,"
he said.
Her scream when that arrow had gone through Rowan.
"I'm sorry,"
he said again.
She gazed up at the stars, toward the north. Her face was so cold.
"Would you have truly killed him if you'd had the chance?"
"Yes,"
Kaol breathed.
"I was ready for that."
She slowly turned to him.
"We'll do it.
Together.
We'll free magic.
Then you and I will go in there and end it together. You're not going to insist I stay back?"
"How can I deny you that last gift to him?"
"Aelin."
Her shoulders sagged slightly.
"I don't blame you. If it had been Rowan with that collar around his neck, I would have done the same thing."
The words hit him in the gut as she walked away. A monster, he'd called her weeks ago. He had believed it, and allowed it to be a shield against the bitter tang of disappointment and sorrow. He was a fool. They moved Rowan before dawn. By whatever immortal grace lingering in his veins, he'd healed enough to walk on his own, and so they slipped out of the lovely country house before any of the staff awoke. Aelin said goodbye only to Fleetfoot, who had slept curled by her side during the long night that she'd watched over Rowan. Then they were off, Aelin and Adian flanking Rowan, his arms slung over their shoulders as they hurried across the foothills. The early morning mist cloaked them as they made their way into Rifthold one last time. Chapter 62. Manon didn't bother looking pleasant as she sent Abraxo slamming into the ground in front of the king's party. The horses whinnied and bucked while the 13 circled above the clearing in which they'd spotted the party.
"Wing leader,"
the king said from astride his war horse, not at all perturbed. Beside him, his son Dorian cringed. Cringed the way that blonde thing in Morath had when it attacked them.
"Was there something you wanted?"
the king asked coolly.
"Or a reason you look halfway to Hellas's realm?"
Manon dismounted Abraxos and walked toward the king and his son. The prince focused on his saddle, careful not to meet her eyes,
There are rebels in your woods, she said. They took your little prisoner out of the wagon, and then tried to attack me and my 13. I slaughtered them all. I hope you don't mind. They left 3 of your men dead in the wagon, though it seems their loss wasn't noticed. The king merely said,
You came all this way to tell me that.
I came all this way to tell you that when I face your rebels, your enemies, I shall have no interest in prisoners, and the 13 are not a caravan to transport them as you will. She stepped closer to the prince's horse.
Dorian, she said,
a command and a challenge. Sapphire eyes snapped to hers, no trace of otherworldly darkness. Just a man trapped inside. She faced the king. You should send your son to Morath. It'd be his sort of place. Before the king could reply, Manon walked back to Abraxos. She'd planned on telling the king about Aelin, about the rebels who called themselves Adian and Rowan and Kaol. But they were human, and could not travel swiftly, not if they were injured. She owed her enemy a life debt. Manon climbed into Abraxos's saddle. My grandmother might be High Witch, she said to the king, but I ride at the head of the armies. The king chuckled.
Ruthless. I think I rather like you, Wing Leader.
That weapon my grandmother made? The mirrors? You truly plan to use shadow fire with it? The king's ruddy face tightened with warning. The replica inside the wagon had been a fraction of the size of what was depicted in the plans nailed to the wall. Giant transportable battle towers, 100 feet high, their insides lined with the sacred mirrors of the ancients. Mirrors that were once used to build and break and mend. Now they would be amplifiers, reflecting and multiplying any power the king chose to unleash, until it became a weapon that could be aimed at any target. If the power were Kaltain's shadow fire.
You ask too many questions, Wing Leader,
the king said. I don't like surprises, was her only reply. Except this. This had been a surprise. The weapon wasn't for winning glory or triumph or for the love of battle. It was for extermination. A full-scale slaughter that would involve little fighting at all. Any opposing army, even Aelin and her warriors, would be defenseless. The king's face was turning purple with impatience. But Manon was already taking to the skies, Abraxos beating his wings hard. She watched the prince until he was a speck of black hair, and wondered what it was like to be trapped within that body. Elide Lachen waited for the supply wagon. It didn't come. A day late, 2 days late. She hardly slept for fear it would arrive when she was dozing. When she awoke on the 3rd day, her mouth dry, it was already habit to hurry down to help in the kitchen. She worked until her leg nearly gave out. Then, just before sunset, the whinny of horses and the clatter of wheels and the shouts of men bounced off the dark stones of the Long Keep Bridge. Elide slipped from the kitchen before they could notice her, before the cook could conscript her into performing some new task. She hurried up the steps as best she could with her chain, her heart in her throat. She should have kept her things downstairs, should have found some hiding spot. Up and up into Manon's tower. She'd refilled the water skein each morning and had amassed a little supply of food in a pouch. Elide threw open the door to Manon's room, searching for the pallet where she kept her supplies. But Vernon was inside. He sat on the edge of Manon's bed as if it were his own.
Going somewhere, Elide?
Chapter 63.
Where on earth could you be headed?
Vernon said as he stood, smug as a cat. Panic bleated in her veins. The wagon. The wagon.
Was that the plan all along? To hide among those witches and then run?
Elide backed toward the door. Vernon clicked his tongue.
We both know there's no point in running, and the Wing Leader isn't going to be here any time soon.
Elide's knees wobbled.
Oh, gods.
But is my beautiful, clever niece human? Or which kind?
Such an important question.
He grabbed her by the elbow, a small knife in his hand. She could do nothing against the stinging slice in her arm, the red blood that welled.
Not a witch at all, it seems.
I am a Blackbeak,
Elide breathed. She would not bow to him, would not cower. Vernon circled her.
Too bad they're all up north and can't verify it.
Fight, 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 her blood sang. Do not let him cage you. Your mother went down fighting. She was a witch, and you are a witch, and you do not yield. You do not yield.
Vernon lunged, faster than she could avoid in her chains, one hand gripping her under the arm while the other slammed her head into the wood so hard that her body just stopped. That was all he needed. That stupid pause to pin her other arm, gripping both in his hand while the other now clenched on her neck hard enough to hurt. To make her realize that her uncle had once trained as her father had.
You're coming with me.
No.
The word was a whisper of breath. His grip tightened, twisting her arms until they barked in pain.
Don't you know what a prize you are? What you might be able to do?
He yanked her back, opening the door.
No.
No, she wouldn't let him take her. Wouldn't. But screaming would do her no good. Not in a keep full of monsters. Not in a world where no one remembered she existed, or bothered to care. She stilled, and he took that as acquiescence. She could feel his smile at the back of her head as he nudged her into the stairwell.
Blackbeak blood is in your veins, along with our family's generous line of magic.
He hauled her down the stairs, and bile burned her throat. There was no one coming for her, because she had belonged to no one.
The witches don't have magic, not like us, but you, a hybrid of both lines.
Vernon gripped her arm harder, right over the cut he'd made, and she cried out. The sound echoed, hollow and small, down the stone stairwell.
You do your house a great honor, Elide.
Vernon left her in a freezing dungeon cell. No light. No sound, save for the dripping of water somewhere. Shaking, Elide didn't even have the words to beg, as Vernon tossed her inside.
You brought this upon yourself, you know,
he said,
when you allied with that witch, and confirmed my suspicions that their blood flows through your veins.
He studied her, but she was gobbling down the details of the cell. Anything, anything to get her out. She found nothing.
I'll leave you here until you're ready. I doubt anyone will notice your absence anyway.
He slammed the door, and darkness swallowed her entirely. She didn't bother trying the handle. Manon was summoned by the Duke the moment she set foot in Morath. The messenger was cowering in the archway to the Aerie, and could barely get the words out as he took in the blood and dirt and dust that still covered Manon. She'd contemplated snapping her teeth at him just for trembling like a spineless fool, but she was drained. Her head was pounding, and anything more than basic movement required far too much thought. None of the 13 had dared say anything about her grandmother, that she had approved of the breeding. Sorrel and Vesta trailing mere steps behind her, Manon flung open the doors to the Duke's council chamber, letting the slamming wood say enough about what she thought of being summoned immediately. The Duke, only Caltaine beside him, flicked his eyes over her.
Explain your appearance.
Manon opened her mouth. If Vernon heard that Aelin Galathinius was alive, if he suspected for one heartbeat the debt that Aelin might feel toward Elide's mother for saving her life, he might very well decide to end his niece's life. Rebels attacked us. I killed them all. The Duke chucked a file of papers onto the table. They hit the glass and slid, spreading out in a fan.
For months now, you've wanted explanations.
Well, here they are. Status reports on our enemies, larger targets for us to strike. His Majesty sends his best wishes.
Manon approached.
Did he also send that demon prince into my barracks to attack us? She stared at the Duke's thick neck, wondering how easily the rough skin would tear. Parrington's mouth twisted to the side. Roland had outlived his usefulness. Who better to take care of him than your 13?
I hadn't realized we were to be your executioners. She should indeed rip out his throat for what he'd tried to do.
Beside him, Caltaine was wholly blank. A shell. But that shadow fire. Would she summon it if the Duke were attacked?
Sit and read the files, Wingleader.
She didn't appreciate the command and let out a snarl to tell him so. But she sat. And read. Reports on Eelway, on Melisande, on Fenharrow, on the Red Desert and Wendlin. And on Terrison. According to the report, Aelin Galathinius, long believed to be dead, had appeared in Wendlin and bested 4 of the Vogue princes, including a lethal general in the king's army, using fire.
Aelin had fire magic, Aelin had said. She could have survived the cold.
But that meant that magic still worked in Wendlin, and not here. Manon would bet a great deal of the gold hoarded at Blackbeak Keep that the man in front of her, and the king in Rifthold, was the reason why. Then a report of Prince Adian Ashriver, former general of Otterlin, kin to the Ashrivers of Wendlin, being arrested for treason, for associating with rebels. He had been rescued from his execution mere weeks ago by unknown forces. Possible suspects, Lord Wren Alsbrook of Terrison, and Lord Kaol Westfall of Otterlin, who had loyally served the king and his captain of the guard, until he joined forces with Adian this past spring and fled the castle the day of Adian's capture. They suspected the captain hadn't gone far, and that he would try to free his lifelong friend, the crown prince.
Free him. The prince had taunted her, provoked her, as if trying to get her to kill him, and Roland had begged for death.
If Kaol and Adian were both now with Aelin Galathinius, all working together. They hadn't been in the forest to spy, but to save the prince, and whoever that female prisoner had been. They'd rescued one friend, at least. The Duke and the King didn't know. They didn't know how close they'd been to all their targets, or how close their enemies had come to seizing their prince. That was why the captain had come running. He had come to kill the prince, the only mercy he believed he could offer him. The rebels didn't know that the man was still inside.
Well, the Duke demanded. Any questions?
You have yet to explain the necessity of the weapon my grandmother is building. A tool like that could be catastrophic. If there's no magic, then surely obliterating the Queen of Terrison can't be worth the risk of using those towers.
Better to be over-prepared than surprised. We have full control of the towers.
Manon tapped an iron nail on the glass table.
This is a base of information, Wingleader. Continue to prove yourself and you will receive more.
Prove herself? She hadn't done anything lately to prove herself, except shred one of his demon princes and butcher that mountain tribe for no good reason. A shiver of rage went through her. Unleashing the prince in the barracks hadn't been a message then, but a test. To see if she could hold up against his worst and still obey.
Have you picked a coven for me?
Manon forced herself to give a dismissive shrug. I was waiting to see who behaved themselves the best while I was away. It'll be their reward.
You have until tomorrow.
Manon stared him down. The moment I leave this room, I'm going to bathe and sleep for a day. If you or your little demon cronies bother me before then, you'll learn just how much I enjoy playing executioner. The day after that, I'll make my decision.
You wouldn't be avoiding it, would you, Wingleader?
Why should I bother handing out favors to covens that don't deserve them? Manon didn't give herself one heartbeat to contemplate what the matron was letting these men do. As she gathered up the files, shoved them into Sorrel's arms, and strode out. She had just reached the stairs to her tower when she spotted Asterin leaning against the archway, picking at her iron nails.
Sorrel and Vesta sucked in their breath.
What is it?
Manon demanded, flicking out her own nails. Asterin's face was a mask of immortal boredom.
We need to talk.
She and Asterin flew into the mountains, and she let her cousin lead. Let Abraxos follow Asterin's sky-blue female until they were far from Morath. They alighted on a little plateau covered in purple and orange wildflowers, its grasses hissing in the wind. Abraxos was practically grunting with joy. And Manon, her exhaustion as heavy as the red cloak she wore, didn't bother to reprimand him. They left their wyverns in the field. The mountain wind was surprisingly warm. The day clear and the sky full of fat, puffy clouds. She'd ordered Sorrel and Vesta to remain behind, despite their protests. If things had gotten to the point where Asterin could not be trusted to be alone with her, Manon did not want to consider it. Perhaps that was why she had agreed to come. Perhaps it was because of the scream Asterin had issued from the other side of the ravine. It had been so like the scream of the blue-blood heir, Petra, when her wyvern had been ripped to shreds. Like the scream of Petra's mother when Petra and her wyvern Keely had tumbled into thin air. Asterin walked to the edge of the plateau, the wildflowers swaying about her calves, her riding leathers shining in the bright sun. She unbraided her hair, shaking out the golden waves, then unbuckled her sword and daggers and let them thud to the ground.
I need you to listen, and not talk, she said as Manon came to stand beside her.
A high demand to make of her heir, but there was no challenge, no threat in it, and Asterin had never spoken to her like that, so Manon nodded. Asterin stared out across the mountains, so vibrant here, now that they were far from the darkness of Morath. A balmy breeze flitted between them, ruffling Asterin's curls until they looked like sunshine given form.
When I was 28, I was off hunting crokins in a valley just west of the Fangs. I had 100 miles to go before the next village, and when a storm rolled in, I didn't feel like landing. So I tried to outrace the storm on my broom, tried to fly over it. But the storm went on, up and up. I didn't know if it was the lightning or the wind. But suddenly I was falling. I managed to get control of my broom long enough to land, but the impact was brutal. Before I blacked out, I knew my arm was broken in 2 different places, my ankle twisted beyond use, and my broom shattered. This had been over 80 years ago, and Manon had never heard of it. She'd been off on her own mission. Where, she couldn't remember now. All those years she'd spent hunting crokins had blurred together.
When I awoke, I was in a human cabin, my broom in pieces beside the bed. The man who had found me said he'd been riding home through the storm and saw me fall from the sky. He was a young hunter, mostly of exotic game, which was why he had a cabin out deep in the wild. I think I would have killed him if I'd had any strength, if only because I wanted his resources. But I faded in and out of consciousness for a few days while my bones knitted together. And when I woke again, he fed me enough that he stopped looking like food or a threat. A long silence. I stayed there for 5 months. I didn't hunt a single crokin. I helped him stalk game, found ironwood and began carving a new broom, and we both knew what I was, what he was. That I was long-lived and he was human. But we were the same age at that moment, and we didn't care. So I stayed with him until my orders bade me report back to Blackbeak Keep, and I told him. I said I'd come back when I could.
Manon could hardly think, hardly breathe over the silence in her head. She'd never heard of this, not a whisper. For Asterin to have ignored her sacred duties, for her to have taken up with this human man...
I was a month pregnant when I arrived back at Blackbeak Keep.
Manon's knees wobbled.
You were already gone, off on your next mission. I told no one, not until I knew that the pregnancy would actually survive those first few months.
Not unexpected, as most witches lost their offspring during that time. For the witchling to grow past that threshold was a miracle in itself. But I made it to 3 months, then 4. And when I couldn't hide it anymore, I told your grandmother. She was pleased and ordered me on bed rest in the keep, so nothing disturbed me or the witchling in my womb. I told her I wanted to go back out, but she refused. I knew better than to tell her I wanted to return to that cabin in the forest. I knew she'd kill him, so I remained in the tower for months, a pampered prisoner. You even visited twice, and she didn't tell you I was there. Not until the witchling was born, she said.
A long, uneven breath.
It wasn't uncommon for witches to be overprotective of those carrying witchlings. An Asterin, bearing the matron's bloodline, would have been a valued commodity.
I made a plan. The moment I recovered from the birth, the moment they looked away, I'd take the witchling to her father and present her to him. I thought maybe a life in the forest, quiet and peaceful, would be better for my witchling than the bloodshed we had. I thought maybe it would be better for me.
Asterin's voice broke on the last two words. Manon couldn't bring herself to look at her cousin.
I gave birth. The witchling almost ripped me in two coming out. I thought it was because she was a fighter, because she was a true Blackbeak. And I was proud. Even as I was screaming, even as I was bleeding, I was so proud of her.
Asterin fell silent, and Manon looked at her at last. Tears were rolling down her cousin's face, gleaming in the sunshine. Asterin closed her eyes and whispered into the wind.
She was stillborn. I waited to hear that cry of triumph, but there was only silence.
Silence. And then your grandmother... She opened her eyes.
Your grandmother struck me. She beat me, again and again. All I wanted was to see my witchling, and she ordered them to have her burned instead. She refused to let me see her. I was a disgrace to every witch who had come before me. I was to blame for a defective witchling. I had dishonored the Blackbeaks. I had disappointed her. She screamed it at me again and again. And when I sobbed, she...
Manon didn't know where to stare, what to do with her arms. A stillborn was a witch's greatest sorrow and shame.
But for her grandmother...
Asterin unbuttoned her jacket and shrugged it off into the flowers. She removed her shirt, and the one beneath, until her golden skin glowed in the sunlight, her breasts full and heavy. Asterin turned, and Manon fell to her knees in the grass. There, branded on Asterin's abdomen in vicious, crude letters, was one word. Unclean.
She branded me. Had them heat up the iron in the same flame where my witchling burned, and stamped each letter herself. She said I had no business ever trying to conceive a Blackbeak again, that most men would take one look at the word and run.
80 years. For 80 years she had hidden this. But Manon had seen her naked, had...
No. No, she hadn't.
Not for decades and decades. When they were witchlings, yes, but...
In my shame, I told no one. Sorrel and Vesta. Sorrel knew because she was in that room. Sorrel fought for me, begged your grandmother.
Your grandmother snapped her arm and sent her out. But after the matron chucked me into the snow and told me to crawl somewhere and die, Sorrel found me. She got Vesta. And they brought me to Vesta's aerie deep in the mountains. And they secretly took care of me for the months that I couldn't get out of bed.
And one day, I just woke up and decided to fight. I trained. I healed my body. I grew strong, stronger than I'd been before, and I stopped thinking about it.
A month later, I went hunting for Crokins and walked back into the keep with 3 of their hearts in a box. If your grandmother was surprised I hadn't died, she didn't show it.
You were there that night I came back. You toasted in my honor and said you were proud to have such a fine second.
Still on her knees, the damp earth soaking into her pants, Manon stared at that hideous brand.
I never went back to the hunter. I didn't know how to explain the brand, how to explain your grandmother, or apologize.
I was afraid he'd treat me as your grandmother had, so I never went back.
Her mouth wobbled. I'd fly overhead every few years,